The year is coming to a close. I can barely remember the opening, and now it draws to a close. Although the measure of a year seems arbitrary to me, I do remember the last time it was this cold. We have come 360-some degree days back to where we began. But what was it like when it started? Let's go into our memories and see how it begins. Is that where we are now? Are we supposed to be past year us? Just be yourselves. Have we gone back in time without using the time machine? No, I'm doing this for the future. It's to be used next year. So present you is past you. I'll tell you what's past me. Everything you just said. So I'm recording this now for next year. When we go back to look at what's happened, it will all be from the past. How will people tell? They won't. Lost. So lost. Look, you guys are just giving an example of what the past year was like to people in the future a year from now. This past year? No, this year coming up is the past year. Okay, so I no longer care. I'm going about my business.
Me too.
Good, that's all I ask. Good.
Good. Live in the present, I say.
When you know the outcome, it can ruin the experience.
If everything is planned, it changes the present.
Fisher random.
Fisher random. Hey, you guys, look at the paper. Wanted. Three people to act in New Year's play. The roles are Old Year Man. Oh, that could be Hardy.
Hardy.
Baby New Year.
Shut up.
And the indefinable, possibly non-existent present. Oh, I barely exist, so I was born to play that. Auditions to be held at, and then there's a date and an address for a performance space in San Francisco.
San Francisco? Oh, it's the background sound I use in a lot of moments. I recorded it at People Like Us's movie premiere in San Francisco a few years ago.
So the audition takes place in your sound effect.
Ooh, gentlemen, come in. Are you here for the audition? Well, we certainly have our old man previous year.
Oh, thanks.
Old man previous year? Isn't he just called Old Year?
Did you write the script?
No, sir.
This is my play. I am a director and a writer. Do you have a name?
Oh, please.
Aren't we all tired of having to name characters?
Okay, something clever, a reference to an actual director or a pun or something.
Okay.
D-rector is my name. Don Rector.
We have a Don.
Okay. Dr. Ector.
I like that.
All right. Starting over. Hello, I'm Dr. Ecking.
Well, we agreed on Ector, but go ahead.
Sorry. You are here to audition. I said that. This guy is old and has a beard, so he can play Old Year. And this fellow can be our baby New Year.
Watch it.
Maybe. I have to see the script. This person here is the real present.
Thanks.
I can barely define what you are. I see you, but it doesn't register, and then you disappear. I keep forgetting you're here until you say something, and then I immediately forget again.
Oh, that's so me.
Hey, you. You'll be present. All right, all of you, come with me. You've passed the audition. There are no other choices, literally. And the show begins tomorrow.
Tomorrow? How will we memorize our lines?
Oh, that's all dubbed in afterwards. Just move your mouths like a chimp eating peanut butter. We'll sync it in post. Everything is done in post. To be honest, it'll probably end up being different actors that we put in post.
I thought this was a play.
It is.
But you're recording.
No. I think it's hilarious that you're time travelers with no imagination.
I remember that sound effect.
We used it for my poetry reading, too.
Is it possible that as we near the end of the year, there might be weird things happening with time?
Well, what do you mean?
As we get to the last bits of things happening in this year, and as there's fewer pieces on the board and the outcome, the end of the year, is inevitable, maybe stuff gets a little more imaginative.
Well, calendar year is based on the trip we take around the sun. It's just continual. It's not like scraping the last bits of peanut butter out of a jar. They used to put peanut butter on animals' gums to make it look like they were talking in movies and TV.
My grandma used to do that to get me to talk.
What's the best way to open the show for New Year's Eve?
The name is Lou, and I don't know.
Eve here.
Maybe with some sort of play.
A skit.
Oh, I hate that word.
Why?
I just do. Maybe Cub Scouts or French class. Something ruined it for me.
Open the show with a little play about time.
A timepiece.
Open the show with a timepiece. Once upon a time, there was a New Year's Eve party in a faraway land. The people of that land had no concept of time, though. So their party lasted long into the morning, with many not returning to their homes until late morning New Year's Day. It was at one of these parties that a certain scientist got the idea for a certain machine which could make it New Year's Eve every day. Or rather, just a time machine, but you could set it to come back to the same day all the time. When he woke up the next day, he remembered the idea for such a machine and vowed to get to work on it immediately. But he didn't, and soon forgot all about it.
The Watchmaker is the name of that story.
Oh, you recognize it.
Of course. Not many stories have the moral of forgetting is good.
And it has the meta thing going on because the fact the character doesn't follow through negates the necessity for a long story, which probably would have been stupid anyway.
So true. I like that short story where the kids don't go into the scary house.
The late Florida State writing professor Jerome Stern had those short stories he made popular.
His brother was longtime New York City Parks Commissioner Henry Stern.
The end. It's such a good format. I wrote a poem in the poetic style I was taught, which is very similar. Here's my poem. It's called The Elegance of Brevity. Poop and get off the pot.
I love that poem.
I have a novel written in the opposite style. It's about a guy who sits down to use the toilet and picks up a copy of The Master and Margarita and starts reading it. And most of the novel is just retelling Master and Margarita in different words.
There's a whole chapter at the end devoted entirely to the red ring mark around his butt.
You read it!
I read it on the toilet. It took me 9 hours.
A gambit is a trick, right?
A gambit is a plan.
Anyway, I studied all the ways to begin a radio show, and so I think I have an idea what to do.
Have you read Thought and Choice in Radio?
No.
Oh, you should.
Bosun! Yes, Cat.
Bosun!
Right here, Cat.
I can't see or hear you.
Can you hear me now?
If you're talking, I can't hear you. I thought for a minute.
Give me a second.
Oh, I think I might have heard you. Oh, okay. I see you fine now, Bosun.
Yes, Captain.
Still no sound, though. It's weird, since we're both standing on the deck of a ship.
It has to do with intention, Captain.
Oh, I hear you now, loud and clear.
Yes, Captain. Our reality hadn't solidified yet.
Takes so much just to come into existence, doesn't it, Bosun?
Aye. What is it you called for?
Oh, just that. To break into existence using desire. I exist because I desire.
You desire to exist?
No, not that. I exist because I want. I need even. My motivation is a paradox. I am a driven leaf who believes it has agency in its journey a destination.
I saw a sea monster! Where, Captain?
There in the sea.
I don't see it.
It went back under. Oh, it showed its hideous head and then submerged.
What did it look like?
It looked like something reptilian. Like a giant crocodile, but with ears or something pointing up on the side of its head.
Holy Sister Gertrude, what is that?
See, it's horrifying.
Why is it just staring at us?
I don't know. It's not devouring us.
Hey, Butch, have you ever really looked at Hardy's ship in a bottle?
No.
It's super intricate and well done.
Don't care.
There's little people in there, even.
Probably termites.
Oh, that could be. It's sort of old. I think his grandpa put the boat in there.
No, you idiot. We put the boat in there. It's Durer's squared cube.
If the boat hits the air, it wrecks time.
How?
It's a finite thing that's supposed to be infinite. It freezes and scrambles our time continuum, which we are cruising along in very smoothly at the moment.
What happens if I let the boat out?
It'll seem like everything's happening at once.
And what'll that feel like? A movie?
Not a movie. A dream. Maybe a bad dream.
A chessboard with every piece on every square. All pieces on all squares all the time.
When I was a house, time moved differently for me. There are certain periods in my emptiness of which I have no memories. But then there are other times when a family was playing ping pong in my basement, when there's no way to have folks partying in your concrete bowels and not remember that. I was dependent on the experiences of others to form my memories, because my solitary moments were just made up of memories anyway, of previous ping pong games, birthday parties, and sweet silent nights of togetherness.
I'm thinking of something beginning with opening the door.
Oh, you could be entering or exiting. It's perspective. You can exit and enter simultaneously. Let's go through another door. Let's not. I'm with Don. I want to chew on the memories I already have for a while.
Do you remember what happened last year, Hardy, at this time?
No, I do not. Because I do not have on-demand memory. I have broadcast TV memory. I only see what they show me. So if the show's not on, I don't see it. What are we going to watch?
Oh, look, it's my grandfather dying. I wouldn't have picked that, but I'll sit here and watch it. What's on next?
Oh, my most embarrassing moments.
That's fun.
If I could do on-demand, which memories would I recall? Would I rather have them fly by randomly? Or do I want to establish patterns of remembering? What do I remember? Let's see, what do I remember about last year? Something? No, that was the year before. See, if I remember events, like let's say Christmas or New Year's or special Hardy White Day, I get them confused. And I had a good time on Hardy White Day at the last picnic. But they all blend together a bit. I know the memories that include dead friends, well, they're probably older ones. That was probably a few years ago. That's the way I recall things that happen annually. Oh, maybe that was, and then I toss out a date. Give a year or two.
Oh, I would love to give you a year. There is, in the theme song of this show, a mention of time. Have you ever noticed that?
Great God, all that religious stuff. And then it says that a year, a day with you, okay, you, the listener, exceeds 1,000 days of mirth. So that's pretty good. But that is a very specific ratio, 1 to 1,000. I think that's a very strange thing. One day, how many days are 1,000 days? Well, now, if you do the mathematics, the 2.5 years or something like that, I don't know. I didn't do the mathematics. I should have done them before I started speaking to you. But I figured we could go back in time and fill in all the pieces of the puzzle. That's the way memories work, too, don't they? A lot of my memories I did not choose to make. The ones that are what they call indelible are indelible because they happened in an explosion of fire emotion that I didn't always ask for. Now, the things that I wanted to remember, subtle things, have faded away because I guess I drew them in a sort of crayon or pencil. It's the ones that are etched in there with acid, the painful ones tattooed on my soul. Those are the ones that keep coming up all the time. So how do you make nice permanent memories? How do you customize them? Say, I would like to have a beautiful memory that's of the same quality of watching a loved one die or breaking up with a spouse. I think I can set you up. I don't. I'm winging it. But as someone who has memories, I think I can give advice. It's the same way with dogs. If you have a dog, you're a dog expert. No, I'm being sarcastic. I'm sorry. I vowed never to be sarcastic, and then I've broken my rule. I'm clearly not an expert. And so, when I talk about making memories, a lot of times I think it's like getting rid of hiccups. Like, you don't, someone says, help me get rid of my hiccups. What's your first inclination? I need to startle them. They need a jolt to their nervous system. There needs to be something that is unexpected to make an impact, to get rid of these he-coughs or hiccups or he-coughs or he-coughs, as we say, an involuntary spasm of the diaphragm. So we scare the person, or we surprise them, or we have them hold their breath, or we, I don't know, punch them in the face or something like that. And the shock of it to their nervous system causes them to breathe in such a way that their diaphragm relaxes, in the same way that you would relax their bowels if you wanted them to be so scared that they pooed. And then the he-coughs vanish. Now, to make a memory or to impact the human consciousness, I believe that sometimes you need to set them away from their familiar patterns. If you've done something all the time, you're familiar with the way it goes. You've learned the rules. Sometimes you keep learning new rules so you can become an expert in your field. You can do a thing with mastery. I have mastered the art of not tying. I haven't. Can you imagine what that would take? There's all sorts of knots. They go in all different directions. It's a complicated mathematical thing. It isn't just an old crusty sailor with Popeye arms, sitting on the edge of a dock making knots. You know, knots are complicated geometric mathematical structures, are they not?
Yes, what is your point, defense attorney? Get on with it.
I will, Your Honor. I'm about to make a very important point. And I believe this. Sometimes I do feel like, what's the Andy Griffith lawyer show? It's Matlock. Gosh, I don't know Matlock. Matlock's an interesting name. Sounds like a biblical demon. But it's not. It's a country lawyer. So, what I'm saying to you, my friend, is that if these memories need to have this big impact, and that you are difficult to surprise, that we must find ways to shock our souls or surprise ourselves. Have you noticed that when you go to make a memory, say, I'm going to make a memory, I'm going to go upon vacation. No one says that. I'm going to go on a vacation. I have to travel like to very long ago sometimes. I come back with all these crazy speech patterns. You want to go on vacation, say, I'm going to make memories. A lot of places that would have you come spend money at their resorts say, come on, they offer to say, we're going to help you make memories. What part are you going to do? I'm going to hold the thing. You're going to do most of the making. I'll put it in the kiln or whatever. So you go and you go, I'm going to make memories. Now, when you do that, sometimes you can't. It's very difficult to will them into the long term, the emotional part. I'm not talking about things you study to become a doctor or something or a brain surgeon. I'm talking about those kind of memories that haunt, good or bad. They come up. You keep going back to them. Those are difficult to self-create, to put yourself in. I'm going to do that on purpose. I'm going to make a memory I know is going to last. Now you say, well, oh, I made a baby. And then seeing the baby born was a lasting memory. Yes, you can do it that way. That's setting yourself up. That's a good one. But are there other ways to surprise yourself? Are there other ways to get around the normal open? Are there other ways to do it? Are there other ways to circumvent the opening moves of the game and start in the... Are there other ways to surprise yourself into doing something new and making a memory, a fresh, original one? I do believe that I have memories of me remembering things. Like I was sitting around that day in my room. Oh, what a beautiful thing. And I associate it with certain events. But I think it's because I was remembering them then. How many Xerox copies away was that? Have you dreamt this man? Once you make a lot of copies of a thing, it begins to lose its detail.
and it becomes something other, something symbolic. Oh, I have so many of those. And I've told them as stories. For instance, I once worked as a clown at a miniature golf course, the owner of which died just last week. So this is fresh in my mind. Now, I will tell you some stories with details, but I want to tell you that I've been telling these stories for years, and the purpose is always a sort of humiliation. I tell them in a self-deprecating manner to demonstrate that I have endured a sort of demeaning awfulness in a gentle way. You know, not like, it wasn't crushing to the human soul. It's meant to be entertaining, you know. Stories where a person is not damaged as much as they're just get poo on them or something, or animal pees on them. That degree of humiliation. Not the real serious kind, do you follow me? The kind that evokes laughter, all right? The kind that we all deserve. So everybody needs to have waste dumped on them. And you laugh, that kind of thing. No one gets hurt. But I've used these stories of this bad job or having to dress up as a clown and everything as a way of demonstrating that I understand, you know, that degree of vulnerability or humiliation, that sort of thing. And I've told the story so many times that the details that I extract are towards that end. And then I finally realized that I did not find any of this particularly humiliating. They were just strange details of my life, and at the time, everything made sense, and it still made sense. I was choosing to remember it in such a way that it created a narrative that probably wasn't true. I worked as a clown for a miniature golf course. Therefore, it was a corporation, though a small corporation, and they had this idea for a mascot, and the mascot was to wear a jumpsuit of the corporate colors, which were a very interesting shade of orange and the very appealing white. So it was an orange and white, not unlike Whataburger. I don't mean to mention a company, but those colors. So I could have been mistaken for their corporate clown, which would have been fine. Thumbs up. But I also had, I believe, a sort of orangish wig of the large kind, like an afro wig. So my hair was sticking out in a wiry way. These are meant to be amusing, although it's a human hairstyle, and the people who think it's amusing, I think there's something wrong with them. But I was wearing it, and it's just hair. People laugh, or I just don't get it. I find human differences to be wonderful. They make me tear up in their beauty. And I don't find them to be strange. So for clowns, a lot of the clown tradition is based around mocking something about different ways of being human. I mean, I don't want to wee-wee on your clowns, but most people don't like them anyway. So I think I'm not saying anything that you're not going, yeah. I suspected. There's other ways to be funny and move around and clown around and be mime. There's a New York City clown mime that I know. He doesn't put on any makeup, Jeff. I think he's a genius. But, you know, and you can do that, or Buster Keaton or something. You don't need a red foam nose. You don't need a red foam nose that has a crust of spirit gum on it. You don't need a red foam nose with a crust of spirit gum that has also been worn by other part-time employees. You know what I'm saying? So you take a foam thing like the end of this microphone and you glue it. It's split like a baked potato. And then you glue the inside of the split and then you put that on your human nose. And that's meant to keep it on because you're going to be moving your clown head around. And then the makeup was white clown makeup, and I had dimples that were supposed to resemble the orange golf ball that was also the symbol of this place. And red around the mouth and everything. Awful, awful. I didn't know what I was doing. And then you're supposed to powder it, you know, so that it doesn't come off. And I found that this was a bit much. So powdering it, that's a bit delicate for me. I'm just going to get a man. I don't care. And that was my attitude. And so I was there being the mascot to this place with my funny, misshapen golf clubs. Ooh, boy, I can't golf like that at birthday parties, giving out tokens for the machines, the, not pinball, but they were the first generation of electronic, like Pac-Man and all those kind of things. All the children would gather around me saying, "You're not a real clown, give me tokens." And that was my job. And I would do this thing. And one day I was standing out front of the business and waving to people in the parking lot. It was, the whole business was in the parking lot of a mall. It wasn't part of the mall. You know, isn't that strange? Is that they sold this person this, I'm going to sell you the edge of the mall and you can put a outdoor putting place. Okay. And I was standing out front, and this carload of folks gets out, and there's a little girl, and she sees me, and she says the name of the mascot. She says, I'm not going to say it. I won't give any, I don't want to remember anything about it. This is enough remembering for me. And and her whole family's there, and she runs at me, and in her, it looks like a confirmation dress or something. It's a little white dress. How old's the child, you're saying? I don't know, 5? Maybe? I'm not good with ages. 15? No, she was like 5, I guess. And I kneel down. She was maybe 4 even. Little kid, but enough to say your name. You know, really sweet. And I kneel down, and she wants to hug me, and I hug her. And she pulls back, and my face is on her dress, like on the shoulder of a all my makeup has come off, all the reds, all the oranges are smeared on her beautiful white church dress. Why these folks were coming after church or something, I don't know. It's like, oh, if you go to church, if you get your baptism, we're going to let you play whack-a-mole. All right. And then she saw that, and she screamed and cried. And they all looked at me, and they were like, "We're thinking of suing." They didn't say that. That was with the look in their eyes. And they all had to go. They all went home. They never made it inside. And I ruined them. My face, my stupid clown face, my false happiness. I can run the wire. Here it is, the demon opposite. My shroud of Turin, of shame on your dress. And you had forced to flee. That was very embarrassing. So it's just an embarrassing moment. And I've told it like that as a story, you know. And the accuracy of it, because it's a memory of a memory of a memory. And I've just filled it in over the years. And it's like those parishioners that restore their Renaissance art in their church. You know what I'm saying? It's like, this is, oh, the face of Christ has become worn. And you say, oh, Mrs. Miller will repaint it. What have you done? And then it looked like a, you know, I don't know what it'll look like. Pogo or something. It won't look human. That happens. Hardy, your memories, are they faulty? It depends what you mean by faulty. Do my memories serve me? That's what matters. We know they're not accurate. Come on, nobody's is. Do they serve me? Are they accurate enough to get this brain surgery done? Are they accurate enough to keep me at least from crashing into the walls of these underground rapids that I'm navigating in my little canoe made of flesh? I don't want to go careening wildly into the sides. I want to make sure that I know what I'm doing a bit. Are they accurate enough for that? You know, yes. Oh, and they constitute so much of my life, and I've watched people be without them, and I become even more obsessed with the present and time. What has happened before? Where's my evidence for it? Where's my evidence that something is happening next? Oh, and where is my evidence for this moment right here? And how long is it, Mr. Zeno? What, right now? How long is now, Mr. Zeno? I don't know. As long as a good brain chemistry buzz. That's what I think now is. I mean, if you really want to talk about it, math doesn't affect me. You say, well, when was, you know, ever divisible? I have a concept of what now is. It's probably, and it has to do with the time it takes to fix a memory. And so now it's between 0 and 20 minutes for me at now. And that's also the time that certain chemicals take to peak in my brain and to do things. And so I think when I say something is now, I'm really talking about that. And then we get into, after we've talked for 20 minutes, let's say we now start speaking about things that happened in the beginning of the show. Without going back, what were my first words? Now, here's something interesting to me. I don't quite remember, and I think I just said them. But without going back and rechecking, I'm not sure what I said. I wasn't trying to remember it longer than when I got rid of it. It's like a grocery list. It's like lines in a play. Have you ever been in a play? Do you remember the lines of your high school play? You probably didn't the very next year or 6 months later. If you're on Broadway, I have a lot of my listeners are famous actors and on Broadway and in movies and TV. And a lot of them say to me, Hearty. They speak like that. They'll say, I'm an actor on stage and screen. No, they don't speak like that. None of them speak like that. The ones who do don't get a lot of work because people say, oh, you need to head over to Cartoon Voices. And there is a line as long as the internet to do those. So bless you, everybody. This is no lie. I'm not going to tell a lie. I'm not going to say why I was there, how I heard about it, what I saw. But I saw at a, okay, this is a Jewish ceremony. I saw a rabbi do this at a Hatafat Dam Bris, which is when an adult is having a symbolic circumcision. I saw him do a Bullwinkle, the moose impression, for felt like a minute. I was just in the right place at the right time, and I thought, what is going on? That is the type of thing we are just some of us. That's a memory. Now, I didn't want that one, but some of it, oh, it'll yell, it'll scream itself into your brain like that, and it's wonderful. And that one's benign. That's what's so great about them. The absurds make their, that's a little family that lives near me. And they make their way into my consciousness constantly. I like to bring them and introduce them every 20 minutes to you. How many 20 minutes are in a Miracle Nutrition? Well, there's three. There's three 20-minute segments in a Miracle. Well, they're not divided up into 20-minute segments. I don't know. Go back and check it out. Something wrong with you, that you're compelled to do a meaningless thing in a very orderly way, in an obsessive way, I go back and look at all my shows and try to divide them up and try to figure out the math problems. But let me tell you, there's three 20-minute segments in my one-hour show. There are three main characters on Miracle Nutrition. There are three parts of time, past, future, and present. And why did I say them out of order like that? Isn't that very interesting? I didn't say past, present, and future. I said past, future, and present. There are three of something else. You're thinking, there are three of something else. He's right. He is right. And if you look around, you will see the number three everywhere. It's usually right between two and four. It's right there on your clock in plain sight. But you don't think of it as being a 320s. If somebody gave you 320s, would you be angry that you didn't have $100? Or if somebody just gave you a 20, I bet you'd be happier than if you had 320s. And psychologists tells us that's because that's a lie. Now, I don't know if it's a lie or not. But I do know if I say things in a certain way that their impact is different. That's why speaking as a raving lunatic, I find that sometimes my impact of my words is greater on someone than the value of the words or their truth or their accuracy or anything about them. And it's sort of, there's an emotional component to the way that we experience things. Is it, would you not say this?
Get on with it, counselor.
That's it. Angry judge. I will. That's what, if you don't have one of those when you speak to people in your brain, you don't have to speak it out loud like I did. It's really good to have one. If you're ever speaking to people, have the angry judge from the movies. Who's, get on with it. Like that, because it's true. You know, you don't want to lose people. Get to the point. Or double back if you have to. You know? You don't, there's the words have power. One of them is to put people to sleep. Oh, I've done that many times. And sometimes it's nice. It's like when you do music well enough, there are people that, like me, who go to sleep. You shouldn't. And it's so funny because the more proficient the music is, let's say, I don't go to sleep when I listen to, let's say my dog played banjo. That'd keep me up. But if I listen to something brilliant like a symphony, I can go right to sleep. I don't know whether it's my brain's going too much. That could be too. I'd like I don't want to die, but I'm so interested in my autopsy. And I know there's no way to do that ahead of time. But if one of you could do just a little, and I don't believe in seances necessarily, but just in case, have them just look at my brain in detail, a greater detail than they would for Einstein's. Why? Because I believe ordinariness has more to tell us than exceptionalness. Have them look at it and then do a little seance where you get together with a Ouija board. Or I thought it was pronounced hoo-hay, because I thought the J was like ha. Get together with the hoo-hay or hoo-ha board. And it does spell hoo-ha. And give me a message. And let me know what was wrong with me. Was my brain exceptional in a bad way? Why was I experiencing life like this? What was the lens I was looking for? Well, sir, the lens you were looking for was a fleshy, bloody, walnut-shaped globule of goop. And then that was helping you navigate the world. So, well, there, I think, is the first thing that's wrong. Perhaps something more elegant. Where you had lenses in your eye, they were sort of lens-like. Thank you. And then what did I do with that photographic-like information? Well, you reduced it to things that you could see. Oh, so you edited it. Yes, it's naturally edited so that you don't see everything. Otherwise, the X-rays and ultraviolet and all that would scare you. You'd be scared by infrared. If you saw how much you make my head glow when you're around me, you couldn't take it. You'd be closing your eyes. I believe people close their eyes and their ears, and you know that you have lids in your brain.
No, I don't.
You're right. It's very difficult to shut out some experiences. You have to endure them regardless. There are no eyelids upon your brain and your emotions. Oh, I've got to ride it out like the flu, or ride it out like a beautiful birthday party that I don't want to end. Either way, I'm riding. You are riding. You're in one of those boats on Little River. In one of those beautiful amusement parks that don't exist. And if they do exist, when you say to me, tunnel of love, I think chlorine. Because why wouldn't you want that water to be heavily chlorinated if people are going, who knows what they're putting over there? You don't know who's coming to your amusement park. Those who come in and out of my life and experience. Oh, I love them in theory. They are like, they're not like customers or anything. All your friends are actually customers or potential customers. Hi, I am Awful Hardy. And I'm going to tell you how to monetize and commodify every aspect of your life, including your friends. Oh, yes, everything you own can be for sale, including your loyalty, including your thoughts, including the way that you comport yourself. Sell that to the highest bidder. Everyone's a customer, the powerful. The weak. Oh, sell yourself. When I was a young man, I would do art projects sometimes. I'd love to be creative. I don't know that I had any particular aspirations, and I'd like to do music like a lot of young people all over the place. And I made friends with other artists and musicians and all. You know how it is. If you're in a band or you like to do art, you find like-minded folks and you get together with them. And you start to do this art and you love it and you love to make music and you find there aren't a lot of opportunities to do it for money. And when you have to do it for money, you got to work real hard to break in to do that. It's hard to get popular. It's hard to take your beloved art and music and make it into something that you could sell to others. And you would get advice from family members, say, you need to learn to sell yourself. And you think, well, wow. Now I can see selling all my candle collection. But because I have a lot of those, I could sell half of it and be fixed for candles for life. But myself, I think I have one of those. I say, oh, well, you don't have to ever give it away. You're just sort of renting it out in perpetuity. You're becoming a sort of timeshare for the will of others. So, I wonder if I could do that. And everybody's required. Say, oh, so-and-so sold out. We all sold out. Yeah, so you have to. They approach you and they say, we're here to buy you or put you out of business. And you say, well, I don't know. I want to live here. So there you go. So they buy you. But then I say that we form a madhouse. So why don't you unionize? It's a type of thing. It's a madhouse, though. I say we form a madhouse. It's the only way to break free. The only way to break free is that you and I form a supreme mansion of madness, that we randomize this game, that we move the pieces around, that we defy expectations so when those grandmasters sit down at the table, they cannot use their feeble memories any longer. They are thrust into the present. They must use the reason and creativity that exists in a smaller time frame to imagine what will happen, to imagine it with some doubt, to imagine it with some chance of it not happening, to bring probability, possibility, and surprise back into their existence. Oh, just by moving the pieces around in the beginning of the game. As we move into another year, I hope we don't have to move our furniture. I'm going to have one of those nightmares where I have to summon back to a hotel and they say, all your stuff is here. And I go, what? It's got to be out. I go, what? I don't even know where I am. Got to move it all out. Get it all out right now. Oh! That's a recurring nightmare. You probably have it too. Maybe you've lived it. It's another thing. Oh, the memories that we have. They're like our family. We don't choose them necessarily. Some you choose. So I'm going to marry one of them. I'm going to have a very special memory that I choose and marry. All right. And the rest of them are going to be like great aunts who smell a lavender. Some of them don't. Some of them smell wicked camphor. And they're going to come in. They're going to be there too. Right? Uncle Musty. He's there. You didn't want him. He's always going to be there. But there's the ones you choose. There's the ones you chose and made. There's the one you surrounded yourself with. Oh, your friends are like that. I'm going to make memories by surrounding myself with the loving and good people. And they're going to, we're all going to somehow influence one another. I've seen this happen. I've seen people get together with the common desire to be loving and good to one another. And while that may not be always their natural inclination and they may make mistakes, that mutual thing is enough to inspire them. We do it for one another. See, like I love and care about you, or I love, I'm patient with you, then you're patient with me, and I'm patient with you, and all of a sudden, we're floating. Because as we mutually lift one another up, there's that magical levitation that happens. You say, well, who initiated it? Like, I don't know. Don't stop. It's a thing that can only happen when we're concentrating together, to put our brains together to do it. Don't think about it. Don't stop, because one of us stops, we drop. It's a weird thing like that. Don't look. Don't look. Just keep feeling it. Feeling it and elevating it. Will I remember this show? I bet not. Some you will. Some of the shows have patterns. You will remember, and some you will not. It's got to have some big thing in it. And often, so somebody will write me or something. They say, oh, Hardy, there was this show. It had this in it. I remember nothing else about it except this. And that thing, when you think about it, you break it down, happens usually under a minute. Or if it's longer than a minute, it's never longer than a few minutes. Isn't that interesting? It's a moment. Oh, that's all I can give you is a moment. Which one you chose, I do not know. Which one you may choose, I do not know. Maybe you will choose none. Maybe it's like I've given you a bowl of all sorts. And you say, I don't care for all sorts. Say, well, there's all sorts of all sorts. Look at the all sorts. That's the whole deal with them. And you said, they have one thing in common. I said, what is that, my friend? You say, licorice. I said, well, you got me there. But they're all, but if you notice, some of them are pink and brown. Some of them are brown and pink and yellow. So, no, my friend, maybe I've offered you moments, none of which you want. But the thing that I promise that I will try to do is that I will try to give you something benign that is absolutely the same strength as blowing a tire out on the interstate. That's what I want. I want to give you something positive to neutral. That's as strong a memory as one of those. I'm telling you, it will comfort you. You will wear it like a blanket in times of coldness, in times when your senses are not given you enough to remember. You see what I'm saying? You're not eat. You have to eat to poo. Or not. That's a bad analogy. You have to eat to get energy. What is the poop of memories? I don't know what that is. We'll get to that. What is the way? Oh, you're all coming up with something. See, I'm a lot of times if I don't know something, and this is the way for the internet too, it's a prompt for the rest of humanity. And they say, well, here's something that this fellow does not know. I shall fill in the blank with my imagination. That's a good idea. That's always good. I think all movies and stuff should end at the end of all movies. You said, what do you think? Or what do you think happens next? But they're greedy. They want to be able to determine that. But that's all, every movie should end like that. What do you think happens next? That'd be lovely. And then we could come up with it. And I bet I'd remember your movie better. You know, I think you're being a bit presumptuous to think you can give me such weak tea that I remember. I like that expression. I'm glad people are saying that. But here's the funny thing, though. I'm going to make a confession to you. So I do like tea sometimes, but post 10 a.m., 11 a.m., I reach my caffeine consumption tolerance, and after that, I become nauseous. It has something to do with my blood sugar. My resting blood sugar is very high. I can drink a lot of caffeine up to a point, and then I become I start getting too much stomach acid, so I can't do any caffeine after that point. But I like tea. And people have tea usually later in the day sometimes. I know my British friend will go, they'll be a governor, cup of, I can't do the voice. But a lot of people normally have it a little later in the day. And they will leave the bag. If you look at the recommendations on the bag, it's basically like leave it in overnight or something. Ooh, it's crazy. And if you do that, it comes out the tea equivalent of that very strong burnt coffee chain. You know, woo! And the caffeine buzz starts slowly, peaks, and then lasts like longer than any hallucinogen. So I can't quite do that. And it's like, whoa, this is going, wow. Too much for me. So I like weak tea. So for me, that's not a great analogy. So those like weak, it's not doing it. But I like the weak tea. Not crazy. So it's a bad analogy for me. It doesn't mean to imply that, oh, I like half solutions or I lack conviction. No, I got a sensitive stomach. That's all that means. It means that image does not work for me. So I have to have something else to demonstrate a lack of potency or conviction. So what lacks potency for me? The ordinary. The ordinary lacks potency for me. The familiar. The familiar lacks potency for me. I like to break away. A lot of things that they tell you. Here's something funny. People who want to break convention on the radio sometimes will just be quiet. I don't know how long. It's been done a lot as a way of being provocative. This is going to be dead air. They won't know it's dead air. It's creative dead air. Or some long, excruciating noise or something like that. Those are wonderful and provocative. You know, what the memory they create is, however, strangely meta, in that you don't remember the silence, literally. You remember somebody provoking by doing a certain amount of silence, or you may remember your confusion. Gosh, it's too complicated. I don't know what to do on this. I don't know what to say to you every year. And I don't know what to say to you at the end of year. What if this were the end of time? What would I say to you? Well, that's where I laugh. Because there is no end of time. It's crazy what you discover doing a radio show. It's crazy what you discover being a disembodied voice. It's crazy what you discover living outside of space and time. Oh, yes, you are listening to me. Oh, you are with Hardy, and we are friends, and we are feeling emotions, and we are affecting one another, and we are entering one another's memories, and I am not connected in space or time to you right now. I'm only a voice. I'm just some vibration. You're doing all the work. Oh, you're doing all the work. You have all the ingredients. I'm beaming you the recipe. It's your live eggs and milk that are making the cake. Here, make the cake on your end. I'm shouting to you from beyond time. I'm outside of things where everything is happening at once has already happened. It's a big circle. The end of the year is the beginning of the year. Are we something eating its own tail? Or something without a mouth or a tail eating its own tail? What are you saying? I'm saying, good luck finding where the seam is. We're a snake donut. Is there no beginning or end? Oh, it's wherever you want it to be. Starting now. And now I will begin. Hello, friends. This is Hardy White. I'm beginning the show here this week, and that's rather unusual. We've already been speaking for a while. But because this is New Year's Eve, is it? I think it might be. It might be some other day you're listening. I didn't listen to your show on New Year's Eve, so I decided to listen to it days later. That's good. I'm glad you didn't listen to it earlier. I did listen to it earlier in a way. Because I listened to it a few days before the next New Year's Eve. Wow. Yes. So for me, it was a very strange experience. Oh, I bet. And there was no real expiration date on it. Yeah, I don't think I mentioned the year. You did not mention the year. In fact, you did not mention any events that happened in the year. So I just wonder if this isn't a repeat. It's all a repeat. You know how you can find out? This is what I would do. I would listen to this show, my friends, and then I would go back and I would listen to all of the shows and find out if this one ever aired before. I'm not sure there's a program that could do it, but you could find out that way. And then you can know what year it is or when you're listening to it. Otherwise, it's just floating around there. Is it ever green? No, it's ever dead. It's ever brown. It's ever an empty tree. It's ever skeletal. Oh, it's a beautiful living skeleton. It's a dancing skeleton. Can you see it? But he's friendly. He's happy. He always has a smile because there's no flesh on his face, showing his teeth. He don't have no teeth. Well, he's happy anyway. How can you tell? Because he's whistling. How does a skeleton whistle? I bet that if he wanted to badly enough, maybe just run real fast and the air passing through his eye sockets, because there's a little smaller hole back there where your retina's supposed to go. Maybe get two whistles at once. Even. Wouldn't that be nice? So is that a train? No, it's a large running skeleton. If I were going to be waiting at a train station for a train to come, or a new year in this case, who would I want to be waiting at that train station with? With whom would I want to be waiting with? And what sort of thing would I want to be drinking with them? Well, I think this is a good time to do my roundup, my year-end roundup of high-end whiskeys. Hi, my friend. Today I am holding a glass of what I call Glen Campbell. And it's a non-existent Scotch whiskey from the Albee. And it's perfect. What does it smell and taste like? Everything you like. Everything you like. Everything that you would like to savor. Everything that you would like to put your nose in. I'm not even going to get personal because I don't know what that is. You're giggling at home and say, well, I like to smell some pretty unusual things. Isn't that awesome? Go ahead. Like sniff rice. Who's the assassin who sniffed rice? Be that, you can be that. But it smells like that to you. Go, oh, I can smell what the master distiller is cooking. And that'll be our beverage. You know, that doesn't have to be anything literal. See, I don't drink literal whiskey. Well, you don't have to. This is a fake kind anyway. It's whiskey of the mind. So they got theater of the mind, but they don't tell you that the theater of the mind is a full bar. And you can get anything you want in the theater of the mind. You can get any kind of, and let me tell you something. The well brands are top shelf. Okay? The call brands are, it's got to be a foreign word for it. I was going to say top drawer, maybe. Oh, there's something better like that. They are Acme.
At the grocery store.
Is it? What is it? Acme. It is. But it's a word before that. I'm saying it with a lowercase. If you can't hear the lowercase, assume everything in my show, like a E.E. Cummings poem, is lowercase. I would never advocate for any kind of uppercase specific thing. I don't think you should own a word. So, you can't say coffee with a capital C is my product. No. It's everyone's. So there you go. Hardy White with lowercase letters, please. Really? No. Don't know. Then they're just adjectives. I don't want to be that. I don't want to be just an adjective. No, I'm pretty sure I'm a person. So are you, though? Yeah. If you don't think I'm a person, then you're probably your definition is too strict. Oh, my friends, I'm glad to be with you for another year. This is Hardy White with Miracle Nutrition on WFS. Okay, let me start over again. Take two. WFMU, East Orange. WMFU, Mount Hope. 91.9 in Rockland County in New York City, New York. And online, WFMU.org, worldwide. May you have peace and health and beauty as you go into the future now. And may your heart be filled. And may you have protection against the bad things, and may you endure them. And so much love and good wishes to you from Hardy White.
I was standing. I was standing at the crossroads. And I understand.
Bam! rich today. You may be poor. You never know it. Johnny, you don't know nothing unless they're gonna break. What do you got to do, boy? Never know it. Let me say it one more time, boy. You may be rich today. You may be poor. You never know it. You never know the next day gonna break. You got to pray. Lord, Lord.